Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I'm joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. The Suns are still technically, I would say, still kind of playing well. I don't know how we would define it. The last time we podcasted was the win over the Warriors. Then the Utah Jazz loss happened where DeAndre Ayton was really hard on himself. Rudy Gobert took him to school. Lost at Houston, that is where the injuries began. They did not have Tyler Johnson or Rashawn Holmes in that game, I believe. Was that? No, they didn't have Tyler Johnson or TJ Warren.
Yeah.
And then in the New Orleans game, they were without Rashawn Holmes on top of those two guys. And then they lost a fourth guy in Kelly Oubre for the loss against Chicago. I think it's still more the same for me, where I think they still are the team they always were, but they are just figuring. They're progressing, actually. They're improving.
Bulls game was like 1-11 that was a dud, so we can give them one every now and then still. But yeah.
I don't know. They seem to have a dud every four or five games. That Portland loss, it was only by seven, but they got They got murdered in that game. They're due for stinkers. Like, they're gonna have a couple more at the end of the year. There's only, I believe, ten games left. And they're due for a couple. But this is an interesting stretch we've talked about before. Detroit and Sacramento, Utah, Washington, Memphis, Cleveland, Utah, New Orleans, Houston, and Dallas to end the season. A lot of winnable games in there, but of course, Chicago was one of them. But at the same time, they were missing four players. Where did you land on this? I guess we can talk about that game since it was the most recent one briefly, but where did you land on the spectrum of the Suns are missing four rotation players and the Bulls are very bad? I landed somewhere in the middle of, like, you should never look like that against the Bulls, no matter how many guys you're missing. But they're missing those guys.
I'm more. You shouldn't get down that big. Like, there were signs of just things falling apart, which I think I went to practice the day after, and I think they took that seriously because the coaching staff was like, went to a film session, was like, here's what went wrong, here's what we've been doing well. And I kind of took it as them wanting to be like, all right, let's get back to what we were doing. And they really did see hear alarm bells going off for one game. I don't know. The Bulls have some talent. Like,
they have three NBA players.
They've been playing really well for the Bulls, which is really well for the, like, it should have been a game. Yeah.
They have three NBA players. They have Markkanen, Lopez, and Levine, and then I think you can make the case that Chris Dunn, Shaq Harrison, Felicio, homeboy from Villanova's name, I'm not going to try and say right now because I haven't said it in a while, Archie Diacono. I just said it anyway.
Yeah, look at everyone was accusing, like, Kevin Ray of saying Archie Diacono, and they thought, does he think his first name's Archie or something? Like,
Archie Diacono for three. Really? I was at the game, so I didn't know about this.
I think he was just saying his name slowly because he wouldn't mess it up.
TLC, Blakeney, and Wayne Seldon. Maybe Wayne Seldon's an NBA player. Maybe too harsh there. But they're without Otto Porter. Former son Wayne Seldon. They were without Otto Porter, too. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you go to the other side, and you've got Bridges, Ayton, Booker. That's already more talent, those three, I think, than the rest of that roster. And you've still got guys like Josh Jackson, Troy Daniels, Anthony Melton. But they played like crap. They sucked. They shot 46% and only put up 101 points, which kind of tells you where the discrepancy was in overall execution.
Do you want to tell the story of the interesting ending with Boylan and Igor or no? I thought it was funny because everyone hates Jim Boylan.
I can only offer my perspective on it, which was from the post-game press conference room because that's where I was with like 2 minutes left in the game.
Okay.
Because when games are over, I go there and try and get my recap already kind of sorted out and stuff because I'm just not going to watch. I've seen I understand like it's my duty to be there and watch the whole game. But at the same time, I've seen so many of these like last 4 minutes and stuff that I'm just going to like save 10 minutes for me and the person that's editing this back home, back at the office. So what happened was Jim Boylan, apparently, and this is apparently, but it's what happened, but I didn't see it. He called a timeout with 40 seconds left and they were down 15 or up 15, up 20, know. Whatever it was.
It was not close.
They actually run an ATO and Igor has the Suns foul because Jim Boylan's an idiot. He sucks. Why are you doing this? Igor was asked about it after the game by, I believe, Evan Sidery the first time, and he said no comment, and then like three or four more words, but just said, like, I'm not going to talk about that. And then someone else followed up. It might have been Dwayne Rankin, and same thing, no comment. And I have never heard him say no comment to a question. I don't think I will hear him say no comment to a question in the future, but it was clearly, that was our answer, actually. It was like you saying no comment instead of being like, instead of trying to deny it, pretty much answered the question that, like, yeah, you were salty about this and you chose to, like, do something about
it. Jim Boylan's, like, half, like, confused wave goodbye to Igor after he didn't shake hands, like, after the buzzer sounded was hilarious. It was like, oh, well.
Jim Boylan's like, we got to practice these scenarios. Yeah. Take advantage of all the game time we have, all 48 minutes.
Why don't you just have a two-a-day the next day, Jim?
In that huddle, he was like, guys, treat this like we're up two and we need to get the ball and hit these free throws.
That's Let's play make-believe, everyone.
Jim Boylan is the worst. He sucks a lot. That is my rendition of Jim Boylan sucks. He is the worst.
That's a good song.
Thank you.
Merch coming out. Album coming out. Part of the Valley Boys.
Yeah, we're in the Valley Boys merch tree. We're somewhere in there. Okay, the Bulls. That loss, it's... So I agree. I think it's
yeah.
They
it's bad.
You got to do better against the Bulls. Like Devin Booker is too good of a player to participate in these games.
I think something
anymore.
Was up with him. Like his legs were not under him, or his hands busted again. But his shot—he was getting wide open shots, and it just was flat, short.
He said he was off from the beginning, and he wouldn't elaborate any further. But he was like, everything felt off right away.
Sometimes your shot is just off. I guess
that's what he was saying. He was just saying it was one of those nights. He had 25, 8, and 7, but it was on 24 shots, and he actually didn't play that well. And same to Josh Jackson, who actually gave them the third scoring option they needed. He played 18, but you were the one who tweeted this. Like he was really, really bad.
Made
in that
his
game.
Shots, but. Not good otherwise.
Everything else was bad. So I think the main thing we're looking forward to is they only have two games from this Monday to next Monday. They only have two games. They play the Pistons on home on Thursday, and then they travel to Sacramento and they play them on Saturday, and then they're in Utah on Monday. So they have a nice spaced out period here to kind of reset, shake off that Bulls game, and most importantly, get everyone healthy. Your latest update from practice is that Rashawn Holmes is going to be back, but
yeah,
Kelly Oubre was kind of not giving the full story on his thumb. Didn't
he said
sound
he
like...
didn't know. He said he got two looks at it, and he couldn't talk about it because he was waiting on, the second update, so that doesn't sound great, and it sounds... Everyone's, like, talking about the tank, but this is... think this is a legit injury because he's wearing a cast. Like George King was also hurt. He had some crazy machine hooked up to his
yeah what
boot.
Happened there
sprained ankle
do we know
yeah he said sprained ankle
oh he was in crutches I saw that
he also said he'd never sprained his ankle before which is kind of crazy.
You hate to see it happen to George King. We wish well for George King.
Yes,
and Kelly Oubre and just everyone that's hurt on this team, including TJ Warren. You just shut him down now, right? 10 games left. People were saying that 10 games ago, and I was like, well, it's quarter of the season left. But now there's 10 games left, and that equates to 3 weeks.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's at the point now where even if he comes back to practice, then it's going
to
be a few
shape.
Days
yeah.
just to ramp things back up. So I can't. Doesn't sound good, especially with an injury that's like that touchy and lingered all season, even before he was shut or pulled, I guess. Yeah. I mean, we're just waiting for that. Seems kind of inevitable, but you never know.
So that's kind of our half recap of the week and what's looking forward, because I don't think there's really any way to talk about it. The Suns need to get healthy, and it's just impossible to tell how they're going to... That Bulls game is either going to be the start of a very bad end of the season, or they're going to be able to shake it off and get back to the form they were in. But the Pistons have actually been playing pretty well lately. Andre Drummond in particular, I think that's a Ayton matchup to look forward to more so with the way Drummond has been playing the last 2 months. And then Sacramento is falling off. We saw what happened with the Utah game, so he gets to respond after Gobert. So those are kind of things I'm looking forward to, but I don't think there's much to discuss. So with that being said, mostly what we want to talk about on this episode is something that I wrote and just turn it into a larger conversation on what I put down, which was that I believe the Suns are going to be fine. They have DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, and Mikal Bridges because of what we have seen from this season with the way DeAndre Ayton has improved, with what Devin Booker has shown when he's healthy, and the way Mikal Bridges has improved. I think they clearly have a core three of young players that if they continue on this road and they're able to stay here and develop and just keep going, like, they're going to make the playoffs in 2-3 years. I think that's something that's going to happen. But with that being said, the clear missing piece of this whole entire process has been stability. And that goes in many different ways, including goats in offices and iPad watching scouts instead of being at the Big 12 tournament or whatever. But with that being said, the way they can at least have some stability is on the roster. I looked it up. Since the start of last season, Devin Booker has started with 21 different players. That's an insane number that has to go down at some point. And I think the way that they do that is making decisions right now on guys. And that goes from Josh Jackson and TJ Warren, who we talk about all the time in this camp, to free agents like Kelly Oubre and Rashawn Holmes, to guys like D'Anthony Melton and Elie Okobo, because I think that those two kind of go under the discussion in this discussion of Ja Morant or trading for a big-time point guard. It's like, okay, what do you do with those two guys? You only can keep one then, obviously, because having the other one just doesn't make sense. Which one would you rather trade? Does Melton have more value than Okobo? Does that mean you move Melton? Melton's on a two-year deal. Okobo's on... These are all the things that they need to be figuring out now, because if they figure these things out now, they can better, obviously, be more prepared for the offseason. But they don't have their permanent general manager yet, which is where I keep coming back to and where I ended the column and saying, well, they don't have their permanent general manager yet, so who knows?
Do you want to approach this from what are three overarching things they must do this offseason? And I can give you my three. I think I have three.
Oh, okay. I like this. Yeah. Yeah. It's a kind of... So to recap... Okay, hold on. First thing.
Yeah.
Some people responded to that and said they believe Kelly Oubre is the third guy, not Mikal Bridges. Do you agree or disagree?
I don't care.
Okay, me neither. Thank you.
You can figure it out.
Yeah.
But I think both of them are... Like, Mikal's not a decision. You just don't trade him. If that's a decision, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But Kelly, I think, would be my number two on that list.
Okay, so let's do this. Are we going to rank them in terms of, like, this is the most important thing or just the three things?
I'll rank them.
Okay.
Number one, get a point guard.
Yeah.
You can do this in two ways. You can sign a free agent man, or you can use combo of your wing stash plus that pick to do it. I think they need to trade. They need to make a trade, whether it's that pick to get a point guard, or you got to figure out your wing situation, kind of chop it down and get another asset in some other way. Like, if you got to trade Josh Jackson and TJ Warren and get a, like, better complementary piece or something in that regard, or future draft picks even, I don't know. But that's going to cause issues because, and, like, their value, I think, has topped out to some degree. Like, TJ might keep getting a little better, but he's not been healthy. Jackson's still a wild card. You can't keep him until he's no more. His value is just tanked. So those two guys, and then that draft pick. Like, if it's not Zion, then what are you going to do with it? I mean, it of course matters what comes your way in trades. If draft day comes, there's nothing. No one wants to give you a piece, a, like, starting caliber point guard or something, with that draft pick as the main piece to it, then... I guess you got to take, what, RJ Barrett or Ja Morant, and you just figure it out, but they're not going to be, you would hope, not a key part of next year's team, and then you just hold them as an asset. But yeah, that's, if you're going to turn it around, those are the issues. So yeah, Kelly's my number two, point guard's number one for me. Number three
Let's stick on number one for a bit, because I think that's the biggest conversation to have here. There's a lot of different ways to go with what you said. I think the first place to start is that the most important thing to realize is that Zion Williamson is the only player in this draft that is capable of being a somewhat large part of this team's focus, identity, value.
DeAndre Hunter, but they already have the wings.
Yeah, value right away, like right away. I think DeAndre Hunter's kind of in there, but the bottom line with this roster is I am going to operate under the assumption that Kelly Oubre is staying. It just seems like the whole way this is going, and it goes beyond the Valley Boys thing, which is fun and everything. I get it, but I really think that he is staying, and I think it's very simple that he is a really fun player for them to have. He is a good NBA player, and that adds up to his teammates really, really liking playing with him. Devin Booker loves him, clearly. So you do not get rid of that man. You keep him here if you can, and they are going to be able to do that. So back to the draft, why I brought up Oubre is because you have DeAndre Ayton, who's going to be 21 next season. You have Devin Booker, who's going to be 23. You have Mikal Bridges, who's going to be 23. You have Oubre, who is going to be 24. Those are four of your most six important players, no matter what. So if you get the big-time point guard, if you get the big-time power forward, that's still four of your six most important players are 24 or under.
Yeah.
And two of them are going to be second-year players. In that scenario in which you get the point guard and the power forward somehow, sure, Jarrett Culver or RJ Barrett or Ja Morant can play this role and not be asked to do so much, a la how you kind of look at Michael Porter Jr. in Denver next year, I guess, where they're not going to be asking anything of him.
Yeah.
But if you make one of these rookies be DeAndre Ayton or Mikal Bridges this year, I don't think that's going to go well. I don't think it's going to go well for the player's development, because those are different types of prospects. I do not think that it is going to go well for the Suns, because that's the last thing that they need is these guys. Jamal Crawford put it perfectly on Twitter when he was doing one of his Q&A. Someone said, who do you like in this year's draft for the Suns? And he was like, we already have a lot of young guys. So, and then that's all he said. And that's the perfect way of putting it. And then if you grab Rashawn Holmes back, who we'll talk about later, or if you're keeping Josh Jackson around, it's like that's another young, relatively inexperienced player. Holmes has been in the league longer, but this is his first year actually playing in a significant role, and it's backup center for 20 to 25 minutes. Not even that much, 15 to 24, depending on the night.
Yeah.
Can you afford to have that player around all that time, given how much value that pick has on the market? Now, it's going to be really interesting to see how much value these picks have, because some of draft Twitter was taking a screenshot of Givney's recent big board and just looking at the names in the top 10 and being like, half these guys are busts. Like, half these guys are going to be out of the league in 3 years. How much value is that pick going to hold? So I think
it's a wide range, too, because we don't know. They could fall to 8.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's probably the part of this discussion that's hard or impossible to talk about, because if they fall to 6, 7, or 8, at that point it's like, okay, well, now you go from trading for Drew Holiday or Mike Conley to trading for DeLon Wright, or like,
yeah,
I don't know. That's where it becomes more difficult to do. So we're just going to operate under the assumption they have a top 5 pick in this discussion for now.
Okay.
And we'll see how that changes, because if they keep winning, then it's going to change. And that's perfectly fine, everyone. Quit tweeting after the Chicago game that, yeah, we still got a chance at Zion.
Mm.
You people have no idea what you're talking about. Get out of my mentions.
Like, yeah, if you are 4th, you could still jump up. Like, you could still fall a lot farther back. So it's... But, like, in this draft class, like, falling back is not that big of a deal, I think, is what you're saying. Like,
if you don't have one, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that right now. It doesn't matter. It matters for trading the pick, and that's why maybe it's the most important for some.
Yeah, it matters for trading. If someone's in love with Ja Morant, if the Magic, wherever they are, need to trade up, or if someone loves RJ Barrett, but I don't know. I just shrugged.
So, my extended branch on this same point, which we're still on, which is get a point guard is number one on both of our lists, is you need to figure out where Josh Jackson and TJ Warren fit in terms of your grand scheme. And the Suns don't have a grand scheme, which is why this is so concerning. But Josh Jackson, just like, it doesn't, I don't see it. Me, you have been slowly tweeting it the past couple of weeks, just like,
I tried to get, yeah,
we're trying. That's the thing.
I'm trying
we
to
are,
see it.
We are both really trying to see it. There are people who say they still see it. I just don't see it.
It has nothing to do with him improving his shot. He's working hard. I'm not going to brag on him for anything personally or anything even.
There's a reason it stands out when he's consistent for more than a quarter and a half in a row, because it never happens.
It's like Archie Goodwin. Like, Archie Goodwin was what he was, and he was a slasher. He worked on a shot to no end. It didn't get better, and he wasn't especially good at other things more than slashing to the rim because he was really athletic. Josh doesn't even have that. Like, I'm more concerned about his finishing at the rim than his shot at this point.
There is no part of his game that is consistent. Not even his defense is consistent. He falls asleep too much. Or works too hard. It's crazy. He actually works too hard
on defense
sometimes.
He works his way out of being, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, there are things where, like, the other night I was watching and there was a stretch where I just watched him and it was, I want to see one play where you don't do something that was not a gamble or a mistake. And it's hard for him to string together just two plays where he just played solid. Like, that's scary. And like Eddie Johnson would say, like, he works so hard. Like, he's the hardest working guy on the court. But Kenneth Faried was that guy, obviously very different player, but he worked so hard, and he eventually got benched completely and had to find the Rockets this year because he would work hard and not play team basketball or bring enough in other areas skill-wise or things like that. It's, you can't just play hard. That's not what this league is. And I was concerned in the summer at Summer League, and then I was like, all right, it's still Summer League, but these are concerning things.
Remember the first two games of preseason when he was doing stuff with Aiden, and we were like, whoa.
Yeah.
There it is.
And it kind of disappeared.
Disappeared. I wrote about it in the column. We had a podcast episode where Burns and Gambo, I think Burnsy in particular, was talking about, like, if we're not seeing it with him, should they just move him now? And we talked about it and said, maybe, but we weren't able to fully commit to an answer because it was a really tough call in the moment. It's only the start of year two. And to your point, he came out of the draft as a guy who was going to help you no matter what. But he is so reckless as a player that he cancels that out somehow. And the thing about that is he is only 22. He is only in his second year. And he could very, very easily figure this out. It is not difficult to see how he figures this out. It was very difficult to see how Marquese Chriss figured it out. It's even kind of difficult to see how Dragan Bender figures it out in terms of getting back to like a top five, top 10 pick.
But Bender, I see, like, even his rookie year when he was awful and skinny, you saw what he's good at. And like, I know that you could say, well, Bender's having a better year this year for whatever he is. But it's, to me, it's very different than Josh Jackson. And Josh Jackson, like, do we just misevaluate every part of him? That's how I'm, not just us, but like every other pundit, like his athleticism, even, it's like, is he actually that athletic? Like, he misses dunks. I won't even talk, like, he takes away his own athleticism by the way he plays.
Yeah.
And it's scary.
So those overlying questions are why I think he's just got to be gone. I just don't see how he can figure it out while this team is trying to drastically trend upward. Not even trend upward, but drastically, because they have been the worst organization / team in the past 3 or 4 years in the NBA consecutively. Like, if you look at the past 3 years in a row, the Knicks kind of, all the teams that are around them right now at the bottom, I guess the Hawks have kind of been there for a little bit, but, and the Bulls, but they've been down there the most. Can they get to 35, 40 wins while still dealing with this guy? Max from Suns Twitter tweets about it all the time. Like, the only reason he's getting minutes right now is because he was a top five pick. Because he is so bad in some of these games that you just need to bench him, but he's got to get the minutes because you need to give him the opportunity still.
So I think it's between he and TJ. TJ's obviously a completely different story where I think we know what he is. And I think if you traded TJ and got a point guard or another asset or something, a power forward, you obviously want to keep Josh and just see if he's got it. But yeah, it's like, to some degree, whether they pick up a power forward or whether Mikal and Kelly are just better, then he's going to lose minutes. And then if you don't trade him, then it's not going to happen after that. So it's this summer or never, and he just ends his after next season as a Sun and moves on. But
TJ's obvious. He doesn't pass. He doesn't defend. Even if he shoots still, he can't play small ball four. We've seen it this season. He can't play it. He's been playing it. But in terms of the effectiveness of the overall team, it's clearly hindered by him being a four, so you need him to play the three. But with all the threes this team has, Mikal and Kelly, who are best as threes, he just doesn't make sense for this team. It has not changed at all. The addition of Kelly hurts. Like, that just hurts. And Mikal being this good already hurts. And it's like, you need him. Maybe you need him for another season, but I don't even think you need him now. So do you have anything to say on TJ? I don't really have anything else. Like, it's been the same.
If you had to choose between those, I mean, I think TJ has value.
I don't even think you need to choose between both. I think they both need to go.
Okay.
I think that you need to look at Jackson, Warren, this draft pick as soon as like the lottery is over. This draft pick.
Yeah.
Melton or Okobo or both. Future picks. Look at those five to six assets and really do your work on the trade market leading up to the draft. Figure out how close are you to getting someone like Drew Holiday or Mike Conley. Figure out how much you want them. The Suns say to us they don't want them, but I don't believe them. I think you'd want Drew Holiday. I just think you would.
Well, Drew Holiday falls into that bucket of he's not like old enough where I think James Jones is like, no on Conley because he said when you're over 30, that doesn't really fit with this. I think Drew, you can say, would fill in. That's a huge if on their end too, though, on the Pelicans' end. So
just figure out what's going on the trade market there for the point guard. And then if it's not there on the trade market, I still think you move Josh and TJ so you can have more money because I don't think you should just be – I just don't even think you should pay those guys anymore. And that's not to say, like, trading TJ for a first-round pick or something like that. I'm saying, can you combine those guys now into the power forward? Can you get those guys for Aaron Gordon? Can you get Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, and a future first-round pick for Aaron Gordon? If you can, you do that.
Yeah.
If you can get the power forward out there on the trade market, and then, so if you go through point guard, and you go through power forward, and there's nothing there, that is where you probably look at one of those guys, and you pick one, and you move the other one.
Yeah.
Because it becomes a question of money now. That's the issue with paying Devin Booker $30 million a year, which 25, 26, whatever it is, which is a good issue to have. It
locks in with the salary cap, I think, right? So that number's not even set right now, I believe. So
this is the issue with paying Kelly Oubre $19 million instead of $12 million. He's probably only worth 12 to 13, if we're being honest. But
if someone sends him 15, then the Suns,
But if someone sends him 15 or 17 or 18 or 19, that's when it starts to get interesting. So if they go through the draft and they aren't able to get those trades, you obviously take the best available guy and then you try and make a run at free agents.
Yeah. What about it?
I think that's exactly what's about it. Nothing.
It's concerning.
It's concerning if they get that far. If they get far enough into the process and they're relying on Brooklyn not matching on D'Angelo Russell or Boston not matching on Terry Rozier, good God, I become exponentially worried about where their point guard plan is because now you're circling back to the trade market again. And it's like, well, what's there then? You already were looking before.
So basically, draft night. draft night, something has to happen. Something has to give on draft night.
Something has to happen on draft night. And it, look, whether that's like you're sitting at 7 and you want to move up to 3 and it takes one of those guys to move them, like I don't. Something has to happen by draft night to instill confidence that this thing is going to work out. Because here's the thing, people. They're not going to draft Kyrie Irving, or they're not going to draft Zion Williamson and sign Kyrie Irving. That's not how this is going to go. I'm sorry. Maybe they get incredibly lucky and they get Zion. But anyone operating under the assumption that's maybe the most frustrating thing this year has been watching all of this stuff come out and us going through another year of this and people still talking about Zion at all. Zion should not even come up. I tweeted like 6 weeks ago that I thought about Zion and the Suns, like on the Suns, just projecting him next to guys for 5 seconds, and then I poured a bottle of water on my head. Didn't actually do that. It was a joke. But I had to snap myself out of it because I'm not saying good things can't happen here, but if you're relying on Zion, a once-in-a-generation, debatably, type of prospect to come in, there's flaws there, to say the least. If you're relying on Kyrie to sign here, there are flaws.
You just need dudes, and it's about turning non-dudes into dudes.
Yeah. Do you have anything else to say on the whole point guard thing in terms of projecting the rest of the roster? Do you think, so let's say...
I agree that the draft pick and the two forwards are, you need to use them and aggressively pursue, yes. That's all.
Do you, on Melton and Okobo quickly, do you have any overarching takes there in terms of...
Okobo, to me, should be on the block.
Yeah.
Just, you don't need to obviously like, hey, does anyone own Okobo? Because he's not worth that much. But like,
just calling Orlando, hey, look at his wingspan.
Melton fits everything that they're trying to accomplish with this current group. Again, if they keep this GM with the same vision, he's great with Oubre. He's great with Mikal alongside Booker. I think a point guard who's a rookie that plays that good of defense has a lot of value. Like, maybe he's not, even as a backup, maybe he's not up to par next year because of his offense has so many holes, but I'm still buying stock in that. But yeah, I mean, the bigger issue is like, you still have Tyler Johnson. So if you get another point guard in any fashion, even if it's say Terry Rozier, you sign him. If you have Rozier and Tyler Johnson backing him up, I'm there for that. That's fine. Like, that's, if we're living in reality, that's at least you got two solid options there. We can debate Terry Rozier later, but that's kind of what I'm expecting.
David Nash, if you're listening, I need you to like cook up your salary thing and see how that works in terms of, let's say they do that. Let's say they sign Rozier. Can they even afford Rozier and Oubre? I don't even think they could.
If you trade those other guys.
But Tyler is the interesting part of this. How easy is it to move that expiring? So we can move into...
Not easy.
I agree that they should keep...
That superstar trade. That's where Tyler Johnson's contract is.
I think
basically, you
keep Melton. He's definitely good as at least a backup point guard. And if you're wrong, then you lost a backup point guard. Whoop-de-doo. I mean, Okobo could be good. I think everyone sees that. Everyone but him can tell that there's something there, but he just needs to figure it out. And we've said that about 14 young players on the Suns in the past 6 years. So I'll take the guy who knows how to play defense, at least.
Yeah.
Is good at something. He's definitely good at defense. Oubre, how high are you going? If the Brooklyn Nets offer him $18 million a year and he accepts, do you accept the offer, Kevin Zimmerman?
I match.
Do you match?
Yeah, that's about the top end.
20?
If it's for 4, maybe. I think that if you said 5 years at lower amounts, that no, I don't know. Like, it's going to be so wonky because I think people see his value, but who needs a wing? Like, everyone needs a wing, but who wants to pay that much money for a wing who, I mean, he is still limited, but he's looking really good, so I don't know.
I looked this up yesterday. He is shooting under 55% at the rim. That is below league average. That is where he takes a majority of his shots. He's only attempted about 60, 70 shots in the mid-range area, and then in the far mid-range area, I just assume he had his foot on the line or something when he was shooting at three, because I've never seen him take that shot before. And then, of course, from the three-point line, he's only shooting about 31, 32% this year for the Suns. So I think you take him in that sort of... I'm scared to say this, but I think he is a... There are similarities to him and Josh Jackson. If you take away Josh's complete recklessness, there's like similarities there in terms of the type of player they are. I don't know. I don't even know if I agree with that take yet. I just felt like saying it out loud. It's been on my mind
to
a lot
see
lately.
How it goes.
Yeah, I think I feel worse about it now.
Nothing surprises me about him though.
Okay.
I don't know how to explain that. I guess I just tried. But yeah, I mean, I think really his value is at maybe $14 million a year. Like, I think that's fair, and I think that's what he's really worth in this market.
Slightly below 15, then I'm okay. So, anything above 15, I'm not okay, but I still think there's a ground of...
There is value in paying a man who everyone likes and is like a glue piece to a team, which he certainly is, I think.
18 is where I think about it. I'd have to know everything going on. 18's like where you tell me how we're going with the point guard thing and how much of this money do we actually need. But anything like...
And then you salary dump those other dudes.
You salary dump those other dudes.
Which sounds really sad that you would salary dump 2 lottery picks for that, but...
Maybe they do. Yeah, them salary dumping TJ Warren is something we might have to accept that is a thing that happens potentially. Like, they get like a protected first round pick for him.
It's going to be like the Marcus Morris deal to Detroit to just open
up. Do you
think
they've been trying to trade him for the past 2 years and just haven't been able to?
I don't think they've been trying to trade him, because I don't think anyone... I keep saying, like, I don't think people like trading for contracts that go that long. Ask me in 2 years, maybe.
Okay.
Or even next
Siri,
year.
Siri, remember March 20th, 2021?
No. Ask me next year, I guess. You can move it up a year.
Well, Siri already put it on my phone, so it's a little too late for that.
Make it a yearly thing.
Nope, she's closed now. She'll be back tomorrow. Our third thing, I think we both agree those are the top two things this year.
Yeah. What's your third thing? My third thing's kind of weird because I couldn't think of a great third thing, but...
Don't fire Igor Kokoshkov, please.
Oh, that one's good. That's good.
Oh, do that, please. Just keep him through the rest of his contract, even if it's clear that he's not a good coach, because stability,
just please
do that.
I think we...
And people are going to say, oh, if he's bad, why do you keep him around? It's like, you just... Look, if it's a mutiny in the locker room, fine, but there kind of already was one this year, and they turned it around anyway with the way that they played in that before that Miami game when we were thinking he might get fired. I just don't fire him. Please do not fire him.
Mm-mm.
They could lose every game by 30 the rest of the season. Do not fire him.
I don't know about that.
No, I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
The rest of his contract.
Okay.
Unless there are written demands from the locker room in which they state they
Dear
no longer
Mr.
want to play
Sarver,
for
I would like to formally request that we fire...
Been rewatching Game of Thrones lately. A lot of written demands in there.
Yeah, I'll call my thing number 4 because that's a good number 3. I was just going to say, regardless of what happens with power forward and point guard, I think to the point of stability, I would like to see either Bender or Holmes back some way. Bender obviously is going to cost less. I kind of like if you lose Holmes, Bender, like sign him as a backup 5-4. Like, I think... I've written about the last 2 days, but there's something still there. We keep seeing things, whereas Jackson, it's like, I don't know what I'm seeing. Bender is like, I'm seeing someone who plays calm basketball, does the right thing, actually really doesn't turn it over. Like, I looked at turnover numbers. He's like one of the best non-turnover guys in the team, and I know that's because he plays everything safe, but he can find the shot again. His defense is low-key good. I don't know. That's some value there. And again, stability, knowing the system. And this is assuming that Igor doesn't get canned.
I have an idea to end the podcast, and if you think this should just be our own like episode in the future, we'll just cut this out. You pitched to me the most, not realistic, but pitch to me how you think the Suns offseason will go and like what they enter the season with.
Oh no.
And if I think you're being too nice, I'm just going to shut it down and say no. Can't, that's not going to happen. Like if you say the Zion Williamson, Kyrie Irving, like get out of the room.
Just leave.
But I'll let you pass if you can figure out something. So this is where we have to like really try and be realistic with it, is what I'm saying. Like they do this, they do that. And this is, I think this is going to be hard because of salary cap stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a future episode, but
yeah, let's do it.
Let's do the future episode.
Throw it out there.
Okay.
I think you just threw it out there.
But. Yeah. So everyone else do that.
Next podcast, maybe, assuming there's not next podcast where we have no big news or anything.
Yeah. I'm going to get David busy the next week. David Nash on Twitter, look him up. He does the salary cap stuff all the time with the Suns cap sheet and figures out stuff. We're going to do that next week. We're going to run through off season or in the next 2 weeks, depending on how the games go. But if it's another one of these, oh, three guys are hurt, they lost by 20, whatever, then we'll be back with
it. We should like write it down and then just like cross things off as we get things completely
wrong. You know, we might want to produce some content on this at ArizonaSports.com. We might do that.
Are we supposed to do that? Is that our job?
Not the last couple of times.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to end it there before we get fired. Thank you, everyone, for listening. At Empire the Suns on Twitter. Follow us there. Tweet us there. Tweet us your early ideas, I guess, for what we just talked about. I'm already kind of stuck in that thought process, and my head can't get out of it because of how much of a nerd I am about these types of things. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.